Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
Good morning, Lee. How are you this morning?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
Not too bad, thanks, mate. We'll start with a listener question. Let me go straight to my files. I've got pages on my computer open all over the place. What am I looking for? Okay. This comes from Diane. Diane says she enjoys your input. She puts it that way. She enjoys your input as part of the Sunday morning breakfast show. So there you go, Lee. Diane says, is there an app that will look after all your streaming subscriptions so that if you want to cancel one and sign up for another, it can be done simply in the one place? What a great question from Diane. Is there such an app or is there a beast that you can, I don't know, download onto your phone or onto your computer that allows you to do all this? Because it is an absolute nuisance. As more and more streaming services come online, it becomes more difficult to, I suppose, opt out if you, in fact, have opted in. Lee, I have a first-hand experience, and I don't mind naming them, BritBox. I signed up for BritBox, and I decided a month later to opt out, and it took me phoning my credit card company and saying to the credit card company, I have opted out of this service 3 months ago, and these people are still charging me with a monthly fee. And thankfully, the credit card company was proactive in reference to making sure that I was not charged again. But the people at BritBox, they wouldn't even return my emails.
So I have a couple of answers to this, and one which weirdly I developed but kind of actually includes a reference to it. So there's a couple of services that kind of do this. There's Optus's SubHub, which is a subscription service app sort of management system that Optus subscribers have access to. That's one way of doing that. It kind of works, but my recollection is you also pay a bit of money to be a part of Optus SubHub. I could be wrong on that, but that was my recollection of it. Foxtel has Hubble, which is kind of like a streaming service management system that connects with your TV. It doesn't cost anything to use, but you still have to kind of buy the Hubble gadget, the Hubble streaming device, or the Hubble TV to use it. You can actually manage streaming services from that, but it's not all of them. It's a select bunch. And weirdly, I, a couple of years ago, built an app for budget management. I usually don't mention it because it's usually out of the journal purview, but when you add your subscriptions to it, if you want to uninstall them, there's always a link inside of each item to actually tell you where to actually do that. So there's not a whole lot of services that do this directly. My daughter's asking porridge. Weirdly, when I was trying to investigate this myself a couple of years ago, the problem is everyone kind of keeps everything closed and does everything themselves. So there's not an app specifically that does what she's asking, but there are apps that kind of get around to it.
Okay, so the short answer to that is not really.
Not really. I mean, the best part you can actually do is either remember what you have access to or log it into some sort of an app or spreadsheet and then find the account management stuff. To be honest, there's not a lot out there that does it. SubHub is probably the closest to what she's requesting, but again, have to be an Optus subscriber.
So am I correct in saying they make it easy for you to – these streaming services make it easy for you to sign up and difficult for you to opt out?
I mean, that's not just streaming services. That's services in general. A lot of the scam services that we actually see are built on that model, effectively. The idea being that the more they can actually keep you in and the less chance you have of knowing how to opt out, the more they can keep charging you. Most streaming services don't proactively make it difficult for you to find the actual account management for you to do it. If they are, then they're probably contravening some rules set up by the ACCC. However, certainly the scam ones we're seeing that do pop up, they are like that.
Can I ask you, do you think we will, speaking of streaming services, I note that there are several streaming services, or certainly Prime Video, are now starting to show advertisements. And you can pay an extra $3 a month if you like and not see those advertisements, yep. Which really, really annoys me, infuriates me that, you know, they charge you X amount of dollars per month and you sign up and there are no ads, and then they decide to start showing ads, and then they want to charge you another $3 a month to your subscription so that you don't see those ads. I'm just so surprised there aren't rules and regulations that stop the streaming services from being able to do that.
Well, the problem that we're seeing now is that they clearly want to make more money, which is part and parcel. It's not really dramatically different from, say, cable or streaming, or like cable or even satellite services, which still run ads in certain places. You won't find ads across everything. My understanding, for instance, of Prime and even Foxtel's binge stuff is that it won't actually show ads once a movie has begun. It will show them in TV shows in between segments, but it won't show them inside movies, as an example. But they're not actually breaking any laws. They're just offering an option for ad-free as part of the service, which is incredibly frustrating because previously it's been ad-free up to this point.
Correct.
However, it's their sandbox, and unfortunately we're playing in it.
Yes.
So the reality becomes you either deal with the ads or don't. It becomes like regular TV. What I have heard is that it's beginning to drive people back to piracy, and for the longest time, streaming actually did a good job of stemming that, and now it's kind of driving people back.
So, do you see ads increasing on streaming services in the future, or do you think that the public protesting will slow that down, or they'll just full stream ahead?
Oh no, it's full stream. It's full stream ahead on ads. There's no way getting around this. They'll expect people to pay more. We're beginning to see ads in operating systems. We're seeing ads in video games. Ads are everywhere. They don't always work, but they make companies more money.
Yeah. Okay. They do, and they're annoying at times, aren't they? But I suppose...
I won't disagree.
I suppose I'm part of commercial radio, so that's what it's all about. If we didn't have ads, we wouldn't have a job.
Well, I mean, there are probably ways around it, but no one's actually found them out yet. And until we get to that point where it can, there's that.
Hey, listen, the first thing we're going to talk about today is really, really a great idea, but I imagine for the moment it's going to be very expensive, and in years to come everyone will be doing it and it will just be, the cost of a normal TV. LG is going to cut cords for its latest TV. So obviously every TV has a cord on it. Some have only one cord, like, for example, the Samsung Frame TVs. They have a box with just one cord and that feeds everything to the TV. But you still have a cord that you have to connect the box to the TV. LG are coming up with a box of tricks that connects to the TV and there's no cords at all, correct?
Yeah, no. Well, there's only one cord. There's only the power cord. You can't quite escape that just yet. They've got two experimental TVs. They'll both be coming to Australia quite shortly. There's the M4, which is the one you're talking about. And that's interesting because of what it is. It's called, it comes with this box called the Zero Connect box. And effectively what it is, it's that same sort of box that you have to plug all your sources into if you have them, your Apple TV, maybe an amplifier if you're splitting the sound. And instead of needing to plug that into the TV, it actually uses wireless technology, a different version of wireless from what you normally use in your home. It uses wireless technology to stream it directly to your TV. So instead of needing that box right next to your TV, like with the Frame or other TVs like it, you can put it somewhere else. You might be able to put it in a cabinet somewhere or somewhere behind or even just in front of the TV next to your couch. All of that's possible. And it will wirelessly stream those signals to your TV. So the only cord you actually need to your TV is an actual power cable.
What are the problems, though, with technology? I mean, it sounds great on the surface, but when you don't have leads going from A to B, it's just done over Wi-Fi. There's always the possibility this can break down, so it's going to interrupt your service. Is that correct?
I mean, there's always a possibility, even with cords, it could actually break down. I thought for a second there when you said leads, it's like no one has a version of me laying around the house. It's like that's definitely true. But yes, you're absolutely right. People who don't, if you don't have cords, it could break down. They've done a lot of testing with this. We saw a prototype of this about 2 years ago, and it wasn't quite ready then. So they've clearly done a lot more testing up to this point. I'm not sure it'll be perfect. My understanding is it probably works best on line of sight. So while you can hide it away, it probably just means it doesn't have to sit next to the TV. It works best in close proximity. So you might hide it near the couch or in a cabinet or something like that. That seems to be logical. However, it's one of those experiments LG's been testing with to try and make the TV completely cordless. They have another one. They've got two of them, actually, called Stand By Me. It's a play on words, which is a TV in the stand or a TV in the briefcase that runs entirely on battery. So no cord at all. It just uses apps just like every other LG TV does. And so you can actually run a TV completely cordless if you want to. They're playing with these ideas, with the idea that more TVs are being bought, not necessarily used in the living room. You might use them outside. You might use them in the kitchen. And so they're trying to promote the idea at the moment that TVs can be used any place, not just the living room.
In a few months' time, we're going to be back into the water. I suppose there are still people swimming in the middle of winter. They're the brave souls. But come the warmer months, we'll return to the pools. There is now a speaker that floats on the water and that can play in water. There's earphones that you can actually use while you're swimming. Is that right, Lee?
Yeah, both of these are true. I mean, for a while there have been speakers that floated, but they didn't do a very good job of playing music. The buoyancy of the water would disrupt the Bluetooth signals, and it would actually affect the sound. The company that actually originally readied that, they're kind of the inspiration behind most of the Bluetooth speakers that resemble cans. So ultimately, they created the first boom years and years ago, and they've been improving it over time. The most recent one is called the Everboom, and it's literally advertised as a speaker that can float and work while it's floating, which is unusual. Most speakers that work in water typically just resist the water, push it off using hydrophobic coating. They're not made to work inside the water. This one is. Or work over Bluetooth. If you're hanging out by your boat or you happen to be swimming in the pool, you can actually have this speaker float in the water and play music next to you. Shox's open swim earphones are a little bit different. Shox is a company that uses a technology a lot of people don't know about called bone conduction, and that it uses your skull to transmit treble sounds effectively to your ears, and it uses a bit of speakers to transmit bass as well. And so they've got a pair called the Open Swim, and they actually do let you swim while wearing earphones. What's interesting about them, these earphones don't go inside the ear, they kind of go around it, so they're made to be more comfortable and also not fall off as you're swimming. What makes them interesting is that they include both Bluetooth and storage for MP3s, because if you're swimming a long distance, you may not have your phone with you, and also, as I said before, Bluetooth and water don't really communicate all that well. There are problems that make them unreliable. There's that wireless syncing thing you said before with TVs. Apply it to water. It does not like Bluetooth. But if you're in the water and you're happy swimming far away from your phone, or if there are problems, it means the MP3 storage inside the earphones, you can switch to that instead and listen to music as you swim however far you want to go.
Well, for people that swim to keep fit and swim laps and laps each and every day, something like this would be really good, because they can listen to their favourite music while they're doing laps. I suppose this is the first version. In time to come, you'll be able to listen to, I dare say, podcasts and maybe, you know, stream radio stations and all those sort of things.
Absolutely. It could be someone listening to this show swimming in the cold right now with those earphones. It's not technically the first generation, but as I said, a lot of people haven't actually heard of these things before, and bone conduction earphones are new to a lot of people. They first came out several years ago. I remember testing them and looking ridiculous in public wearing them. But as I said, they're new to most people. They're really also good for people who have problems putting on headphones. If you're used to, if you struggle with wax buildup because the headphones block your ears too much, open audio style earphones like this are often considered.
What about prices?
So prices on the earphones, I think they're around $299 for the Open Swim, and the speaker is around $350. So they're not significantly expensive for water-resistant technology.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk about the kids. A cuddly speaker, and what's a screen-free story? Obviously, there's no screen involved here.
Yeah, so the idea of screen-free stories and screen-free entertainment for kids has been popping up over the past few years, because it's normal for parents to just give their kids an iPhone, a phone, or a tablet, or something like that, and say, be done with it, you're not my problem anymore. There's been pushback on that, because screens kind of, they're not the same sort of entertainment. This company overseas, I think it's from Europe, they're about to launch in Australia, called the Tony Box. And the Tony Box has nothing to do with Tony Abbott. It has to do with these little figures that they call Tony. So little toys that don't really do anything other than the fact that they include a magnet and a little NFC chip inside. And when you put these little Tonys on top of a speaker, it will play the songs, it will play its stories of the movies they represent. So Disney movies, for example, and kids' stories like the Gruffalo are in there. And it means that kids as young as 1 and 2 can control a speaker and basically have fun being told stories and being sung to without needing to know how to push play, without needing to know how to skip. The skip function is really crazy. My 2-year-old's been playing with it all weekend. You bash the side of the speaker and it's fast forward. So it's very easy for kids to understand how to use. I think the most interesting part of this is that they come with a feature that allows you, you as a person or your relatives, to record audio in it. So if you wanted to record a story for your kids or your grandkids or something like that, you can actually record yourself and map it to one of the creative Tonys. And that way, whenever they want to hear you reciting that story, they put it on top and it just starts playing.
So what prices are we looking at?
It looks like around the $200 mark-ish, a little bit less for the speaker. They haven't quite announced it yet, but I've heard good sources that that will likely be around that case. The actual figures themselves, they range between $15 and $30, but it comes with one. Weirdly enough, the one it came with is the one that my daughter's been having the most fun with.
And last but not least, Apple is releasing a new phone expected in September and a new operating system called iOS 18. But before that, a warning for iPhone users?
Yeah, there's a lot of scams going about. We hear about a new scam, new bad one every single day. At the moment, there's a really toxic one going around for iPhone users, which is that you can normally log into the iCloud. If you're an Apple user, you might have to log in there to manage your subscription. If you happen to have an iPhone and you get a message from someone that says log into your iCloud account and it wasn't requested, just don't do it, because right now there's a pretty clear scam going on that's all about baiting. A reader sent me one. I logged in to take a look at it using a... We have processes for doing this. We log in using unmarked and untrackable browsers to see what would happen, and it's pretty clear what they're trying to do. They just want to bait your password so they can log in and pretend to be you and take your identity. So don't do that. If you receive a request to log into iCloud, it comes from a random number. It's clearly not legit. Also, Apple would never send that link in the first place, so don't trust anything like that.
Gosh, you've got to have your wits about you these days, haven't you, for everything when it comes to these phishing scams and all sorts of scams?
Oh, it's crazy. We see so many on a regular basis. I'm hearing a lot about in the news, obviously. It's nice to see more journalists pick up the beat and talk about it. It's really distressing and frustrating to see so many Australians, so many people around the world hit by this. It is a multi-billion dollar industry. Australians lost $3 billion 2 years ago, $2.7 last year. So we just have to, as you said, keep your wits about you. The security software can't protect you against scams. It's all education. So if you see something that looks fishy, don't click, call the number back. Oh, sorry, don't call that number back. Call the actual company back if you have to. Find their number on Google. Don't call back the number that you get on your phone.
Good advice. Thanks, mate, for joining us each and every Sunday morning. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend. What's left? Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, mate. Have a great one.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. That's Lee Stark. And if you've got a question for Lee, you can send it to us here via email. He's got a website. It is picar.com.au. All sorts of reviews and handy hints and tips and links to all sorts of information on that. PICKR.com.au.